For decades, the state of Ohio has been tracking small game animals through something called the Fur Bearer Roadkill Survey. So, what can roadkill tell us about Ohio's ecosystem? You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss all this are Ohio Department of Natural Resources, Division of Wildlife, Research Technician Shannon Howe, and Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Director of Education Dan Marsh. Thank you both for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Shannon, let's start with something very basic. What is a fur bearer and why are they called that?
A fur bearer is basically a medium to large mammal species. Usually they're game species. And a game species is a species that you're allowed to hunt or to trap. They're called fur bearers because they have fur, and traditionally, historically, these species have been hunted for their furs, for the pelts, you know, to make hats, coats, scarves, that sort of thing.
Okay. And Shannon, you are one of the people who collects information for the state's Fur Bearer Roadkill Survey. How do you do that? How does that work?
Correct. Yes. So these survey routes, this is one of the longest running surveys in the Ohio Division of Wildlife. They have been run since 1979. That's about 47 years. And so that's the same 49 surveys across the state. And so what we do is we drive these surveys. They're about 40 miles, give or take, each. We just drive them slowly at about 40, 45 miles an hour. And we look for roadkill. And the species that we're looking for are raccoons, opossums, skunks, and groundhogs. And basically, it's just count data. So we're driving slowly down the road, keeping our eyes out. And when we see one, we just record it, the species. And that's how we collect the data.
So you don't pick them up along the way or collect them?
No,
anyway?
We generally don't pick them up along the way. Some people might get out and kind of move something if they want to make sure they don't double count it, because we're only supposed to count roadkill once. And, you know, sometimes you see one week, it might still be on the road the next week. But we recently have digitized our surveys, and we have a new survey app that actually tracks where we saw each count. So it makes that a lot easier.
And I understand you only do this in the spring. Why is that?
Yeah, so that is when the animals are most on the move. It's mating season. So they're more likely to be crossing the roads and more likely to be, unfortunately, struck by vehicles. Oh. We do them for three weeks in March and 3 weeks in April.
Oh, poor little guys looking for a date and they end up on part of this survey. Dan, how does this roadkill that Shannon looks for play into like the larger ecosystem in Ohio? What can these populations tell us about the state?
Well, you know, it's the thing that we have to recognize is that current ecosystems are not entirely complete, right? So these populations of wildlife that are hit on the road definitely take away from the overall population, but in many cases, they're inflated, those populations are, because of something called mesopredator release.
Ooh, tell us more about mesopredator release.
Yeah, I thought you would want to know.
That's right. Yeah.
So typically in Ohio, at least historically, we had very large predators, wolves, mountain lions, bears, et cetera. And they would have a downward regulation on those mesopredators. Well, when those larger predators are released or removed, then those smaller predators are like having a party.
But nothing's eating them.
Yeah, there's no downward regulation on them. So their population often expands, sometimes significantly, very quickly. And so there can be it's out of balance, if you would. So having said that, that's the ecosystem we live in, right? So those animals are all doing their ecological services. They're doing what they do every day and participating in the web of life. But that web of life looks different now. I don't know if that answered your question, but I think it sort of frames things up a little bit.
Yeah. I think that's interesting. Well, we are talking about what roadkill can tell us about Ohio's ecosystem. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Dan, are there specific conservation efforts that you know of related to any of these animals, or are they such big populations that folks aren't worried about it. I know some of these are considered pests that Shannon named.
Yeah, well, Shannon, they can become pests, right? Especially in the urban landscape. And most of these surveys, if you look at the routes in the published reports, are in rural areas. So they don't really look at urban populations that much. And I've got questions about that myself from a study perspective. But they're all managed species. And so there are trapping seasons and or hunting seasons for them. That's one way to sort of control that population, right? Sort of down-regulate it in the absence of large predators. I think I'm not answering your question exactly.
No.
But it's that human participation in the ecosystem is required now to try to maintain some balance. And so that, oddly, is a form of conservation. It is conservation because of the absence of those larger predators that would normally fill that role. And you would have to say and ask the question, aren't people part of the ecosystem anyway?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we got a question from Rich who asks, are they also doing bird strike and bird kill counts in cities like downtown Cincinnati, Columbus, Cleveland? Shannon, I know that's not part of the fur bearer survey because birds don't have fur, but do you know if that's something the Ohio Department of Natural Resources Division of Wildlife is looking at?
I do believe it's something we look at. I don't know if the Division of Wildlife is personally conducting those surveys, but I know there are organizations that specifically do window strike surveys for birds in urban areas like that. So yes, you know, we do get that data and we do take that into consideration.
Well, Shannon, oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'll jump in. Yeah. There are organizations in all our large metropolitan city areas called Lights Out Cincinnati, Lights Out Columbus, Toledo, et cetera. And those are efforts to reduce bird strikes in cities during migration, both spring and fall migration. And if you must know, I think everyone would want to know that we're having the city is having a welcome home party the second week in May.
For birds.
Yeah.
Because
they're all coming back. Okay. You know, they're migrating back from the south. And so that's off topic, but that's something I think that people should know about. Yeah. Celebrate their arrival. Welcome them home.
Yeah. Turn off your lights too, so don't get confused.
Yeah. And hit the windows. Yeah. Thank you for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so Shannon, you mentioned that the Ohio Department of Natural Resources has been collecting data on these animals since 1979. Remind us again of the species that you're looking at in particular, because I know you said that at the top, but some people might have missed that. And what trends you're seeing? Are some of these populations increasing? Are others declining?
Yeah, so the four species that we look for are raccoons, possums, skunks, and groundhogs. And in our most recent report, which this is just part of the data that goes into the report, there are other surveys that we do, like bow hunter surveys, fur taker surveys, fur dealer reports, et cetera, and the roadkill surveys all are analyzed in this report. And we can see with some of them, like groundhogs have a stable population. We're not concerned about them. They do have an open hunting and trapping season, which means that people can hunt and trap them any time of year. There's no bag limit either, meaning that people can kill or trap as many as they want in a single day or a season. Raccoons, interestingly, had a pretty significant increase from the 1990s through the early 2000s. Now their population has stabilized, and can't be completely sure of why that is, but there's a good chance it's because of the decrease in trapping. Raccoon furs just lost their value, and so people aren't trapping them like they used to. So they pretty significantly increased during that time, but they are stable now. We have seen for both skunks and opossums that their populations are starting to decrease a little bit. Not completely sure why that is. They're not at risk or anything like that. So we're not too concerned at this point, but it is a trend that we're starting to see.
Are some of those species more prone to disease? Could that be part of it? Shannon, is that anything you all look at?
That could be part of it, with, particularly with skunks. They are known to get like distemper. They are a rabies vector. Rabies is not particularly common, but they can get that. Opossums actually tend to be a little more resistant to a lot of our diseases because they are marsupials. But it could also just be the behavior of those species. They tend to be more loners. They're solo species. They don't really go in groups. It could be more of a behavioral and landscape change rather than the population dropping. But it's something that we'll probably look more into in the future.
Dan, with raccoons, I don't know if you're a raccoon expert, but I'm a
big fan of the procyonids.
Okay. You're throwing some words at me. I'm getting a vocabulary lesson here, Dan. So I'm going to use little words, but are there little hands part of it? I mean, do you think part of the increase in population? So, you mentioned humans being part of the ecosystem.
Sure.
Raccoons love garbage cans from my limited interactions with them. Is part of that what's going on?
Well, you know, they do have that nickname, trash pandas,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, they're opportunistic and they are generalized feeders. They have they're fairly intelligent animals, and they have hands very much like ours. They have, you know, so they can manipulate things. They can feed in a variety of different habitats. They're omnivores in that they eat plant material and animal material. They're highly successful in that way. And they are social, as Shannon mentioned, that they often are in groups and in family groups and move together as groups. It's kind of common within the procyonids, which is the family of mammals that raccoons are in. I would say this about the opossum that I think is interesting, and that is our Virginia opossum is more of a southern species. It's a subtropical species generally. And so as the climate warms, if you have warm years, they migrate north and colonize areas further north. And if we have a really hard cold snap, that population gets pushed south. So some of that variation in population could be attributed to cold snaps or long durations of time in the winter where they just don't survive it.
Uh-huh.
Or they have damage, frostbite damage. It's not uncommon to see possums with shorter tails, or their ears are not as big as they should be. The margins are affected and damaged from frostbite. So that could be part of the issue with opossums.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, Dan, what else do you think we can learn about our environment from those trends that Shannon just mentioned with these different animals?
So, I think overall, the thing that we can learn is that there are these cascading effects of when we alter ecosystems. And it's the nature of life to alter ecosystems around us. Humans are just really good at it, right? We're maybe the best in that way.
Even better than beavers?
Beavers are amazing.
Okay.
Yeah, and they are engineers, mm-hmm. like habitat engineers, like so many others, disruption habitat specialists, like the passenger pigeon was, and mm-hmm. elephants in Africa are, and in Asia. I think the lesson I would say is that when we start to change things, then active management has to come into play. Because when you have a higher number of raccoons, for example, on the landscape, you often see bird numbers decline, especially ground nesting species, because there's more raccoons, and you see even things like eastern box turtles. Their populations are reduced in areas where there's heavy raccoon populations. So oftentimes when people are thinking, oh gosh, I really hate to see anything bad happen to a raccoon, you know, either through hunting or trapping or a roadkill, I understand the sentiment. It's the right place to come from. But from a ecosystem-wide perspective, there are some measures that need to be in place to help reduce that population, not eliminate it, reduce it, so that those other species have space to live in and to thrive in. So it's complicated, right? But if you love, so for example, if you love songbirds and box turtles, then you need to love coyotes, because coyotes are a super mesopredator and they have a downward regulation on the populations of these three or these four species that we're talking about. They will prey on raccoons, possums, skunks, and groundhogs. Now, and unfortunately, coyotes in the state of Ohio often have a pretty bad rap, but I think they're amazing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Shannon, we talked about these larger trends, but when you're out doing this work yourself in your vehicle, what do you see on the roads most often?
Yeah, so I would say I see raccoons and possums are the most common that I see. I would say some of my routes I see more possums. This year I definitely saw more raccoons than possums. And then I'll get the occasional skunk here and there, and then very rarely I'll find a groundhog.
Well, you mentioned bow hunters a little bit earlier. Does the state count on hunters to track other fur-bearing animals? I'm thinking of like weasels and bobcats and foxes, stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So the bow hunter surveys are for deer bow hunters sitting in their stands, you know, in order to shoot a deer, you usually have to be there for quite a while being quiet. And there's a lot of other wildlife that go by. So those surveys are for them. And yeah, they ask how many hours were you out? What species did you see? How many of each species? And so all of the species that I mentioned, we do get reports on, but then also coyotes, bobcats, gray foxes, all those other fur-bearing species, we also ask them to look for as well. So they definitely help get a lot of data for us.
And these are people who are hunting deer, right? So these aren't people
Yes.
who are hunting weasels and bobcats and foxes.
Yeah, no, not generally. I mean, there are some deer hunters that will shoot coyotes while they're out hunting. That's not that uncommon. But for the most part, they're just out there for the deer, and it's a voluntary survey. But we get good feedback, and, you know, the hunters are also tend to be stewards of the land. So they get that important data for it, and we're really grateful that they're willing to do that for us.
Yeah. Dan, how important is it for the zoo to really educate people about these mammals that are native to Ohio? I mean, you've just taught me so much about some of these little critters. Do people get a lot of questions throw out a lot of questions about that when they're at the zoo?
Yeah, I think more philosophically, these are the species we share our space with, right? We share our lives with them, and, you know, and they enrich our lives. And people, there was this thing called the biophilia hypothesis that Ed Wilson from Harvard put out many, many years ago. And that is that there's this innate attraction to wildlife, right? That we want to have them around, right? So educating people about wildlife and our place on this planet with them, coexisting with them, is an important thing. And I think it's important also in that process to say that all are welcome in this conversation. And you might find it surprising, but hunters, and Shannon would understand this, hunters play a very important role in wildlife conservation. They raise most of the dollars for wildlife conservation in this country through their activities, through Pittman-Robertson Act funding. So whenever they buy their license, whenever they buy their equipment, whether it's ammunition, firearms, bows, whatever, there's a tax on that that was implemented in 1934, and it's the primary source of funding for wildlife conservation in the United States. And so, you know, it's going to take all of us, even though we have different perspectives on this, working together to create a world where both people and wildlife can thrive. And that's what we want to have happen. So educating people about the complexity of conservation and living and sharing this world of wildlife is critically important, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, we have a question from Rich. Rich asks, says California and other places around the world have built overpasses and underpasses to enable wildlife to avoid roadkill incidents and highway and road barriers. Are there any plans or discussions about having such structures in Ohio? Shannon, have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, I don't know of any specific plans for that. However, I do know that we are asking people to report sightings of reptiles crossing roads. So turtles, snakes, we have an online reporting tool that you can report any species to, but we're specifically wanting to know major road crossings for reptiles. And I think the thought is to make some sort of passing with them. I don't know that it'll be an overpass, maybe it would be some sort of underpass, but the thought is in the works. I know there are other states doing that. Like I said, I don't know if we have any specific plans, but I think there are, our biologists are kind of thinking into the future, looking at that.
That's interesting. Dan, why would reptiles be especially important?
Well, I think reptiles and amphibians, frankly, both, they are terrestrial animals that are confined to the ground. So, and often as the ecosystem gets fragmented through development, road building, homes, et cetera, they're traditional migratory routes that are often seasonal for breeding, especially salamanders. If they lose those, then sometimes that population gets cut off and they can't get to their breeding grounds, like ephemeral ponds or pools in forests that the amphibians will breed in. So giving them access one way or the other is important. And I know that there are a lot of efforts to observe, as Shannon was saying, where these animals are crossing roads so that we can give them a chance to get where they're wanting to go easily. Just last night, we were driving out to a friend's house, and there was a eastern box turtle crossing the road. So we stopped, and this is somewhat controversial. We stopped, and we noted which direction it was going, and we moved it to that side of the road, just trying to help. So, it takes individual actions, and it takes municipal actions, and it takes government actions to do what helps wildlife thrive.
Hmm. Well, Shannon, just real quickly, what does the Ohio Department of Natural Resources do with all this information once it's collected? Does it help with decision making at the state level?
Yeah, it does. So like I said, they collect all of this data from different surveys, get it into a report, and then with that report, they kind of review are there concerns? Do we maybe need to do more research into this one species to see if we need to change bag limits or maybe how long the season is? Because we, like he said, we are a part of the ecosystem. We are huge in the conservation of these species with our actions as humans. So we can use that data to change how we go about doing that to make sure that it maintains and stays to be a healthy population.
Okay. And it sounds like everybody can do their part in one way or another, huh, Dan?
Yeah. And I think trusting our wildlife scientists and the work that they do, like Shannon and others, and trusting their authority and their knowledge and their expertise is very important. Because in many parts of the world and in our country, sometimes their expertise is questioned. Mm. And it's not that questioning is bad, but science isn't done through the democratic process. You have to do science.
Yeah. Well, I've been talking with Ohio Department of Natural Resources Division of Wildlife Research Technician Shannon Howe and Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Director of Education Dan Marsh. Thank you both so much for your time today. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez-Cornu. If you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thanks for listening.